Hello and welcome to episode number 6, which is kind of a new one for us because it's mostly news and not as much a topic. But we have something for you. Stay tuned. But first of all, Lana, you had a really great test to introduce to. Explain what you did.
Yes. And I'll kind of read it out for everyone's entertainment. But I saw someone post, I don't remember what credit, it's not a novel idea. I didn't come up with this, but I saw a post somewhere and someone did a test. They took an image of a capture code, which is basically these confirmation screens that you get before, you know, changing your password or maybe even logging into different systems. It's basically another level of verification that, you know, different websites can enforce. But basically there are these characters that you read and decipher on your own. And so someone posted and, you know, they submitted an image, they took an image and then asked ChatGPT to read what it was. And let me, for everyone's entertainment, that's a really brief response. So I'll kind of read it. But so I took a screenshot of just some random capture code and I said, what's this? And ChatGPT says, this image shows a capture challenge on the computer screen, which is a type of security measure used on websites to verify that the user is a human and not a robot. The challenge typically involves typing in characters that are displayed in a distorted or obstructed image. And then they asked, what does it say? It says, the capture image appears to display the characters V6TQABC followed by a character that looks like S with an additional swirl. And it kind of gives you some hints. But the funny thing is like, it basically says, hey, this is meant to specifically be human readable. This is bot proof. Like
it's not.
Yeah. So I think we entered a dangerous game where you could potentially, I'm not trying to plant bad ideas into anyone's head, but I thought it was a really interesting test.
I think the captures were already with OCR. They were like kind of manageable. To be honest, like I really enjoy the attributes that lead to that, because we have in our chatbot that we built for our use case, we can just drop in screenshots, and with that technology I'm able to identify the error in the screenshot. It might be like the whole screen with the whole desktop, and the error is like one small window in the corner, but it detects it, gives me back the text. The OCR is not that good, but it gets better now with the new models, as far as I understood. And yeah, it's kind of a really useful thing. But of course, everywhere, like, I think it's like the same with energy. Like, everyone wants unlimited energy and unlimited energy source. But what always happens if you have an unlimited or high energy source, someone builds a weapon from it.
Everyone's going to take advantage of it. The one thing I did want to mention that I didn't actually realize until recently, but some of these capture codes, just on staying on the same topic, I don't know if you've ever done this before, where you have like a grid of 9 different images and it says like pick a...
I get them always, all the time.
But do you know what they're actually used for?
I'm not solving them every time, just to be honest.
But do you know what they're actually used for? I didn't know this.
For training. For AI training. Yeah.
I was like, no, this is just like a fun test, like to decipher between like whether you're a human or a bot. Yeah. But in actuality, do you want to say what they're used for?
They train AI with that, for image recognition.
Well, and that's automotive kind of companies. So for those that didn't know, but those images are actually used for automotive kind of autonomous vehicles training. So
it's always a street scene somewhere. Yeah,
exactly. So you're teaching basically these autonomous vehicles how to decipher different fuzzy images, especially in like low or dimly lit scenarios, like right, like at night or something like that.
I always struggle. Sometimes, like there is like they asked for the lights, like signaling, like what do you call it in America, like. The street lights. Not the street lights, but the where it's red and green.
Traffic light?
Traffic lights. That's the word I searched. Sorry, I'm German.
Your excuse.
and the traffic lights, and sometimes you have like, where's the traffic lights in the picture? And like, there's like one small corner of the traffic light in another block. And I always like, should I click it? At one point, it was always three. Now, nowadays, it's also might be four, might be three.
Yeah.
That's why I have, like, not regularly, but like sometime I get them wrong. Even like after two tries, like because of that, like ambiguity, like between like some corner of the object you're searching for in that block, is it counting? Is it not? Nobody knows.
Yeah, that's actually a good one. Yeah, I hate those images where it's like a big, you know, small piece of the wheel is there, and it's like, well, technically the wheel is there, so should I select it or not? But it doesn't really give you feedback whether you've selected the right one or not, because again, it's just using your data and what you would assume. It's capturing your intent without feedback. So how you would interpret that task. So I think that's basically the purpose behind it. So sorry, kind of totally diverted this whole conversation from the news for this.
Yeah, but it's, it was an AI topic, wasn't it? Like, so talking about new models. Last week, we got another big one.
Claude 3.
Like, is it Claude or is it Claude? I always say Claude. Like, because it's like, I think it's meant to be French, and French would be Claude. Because Claude is written with differently. We know that.
Yeah, so I don't know. Don't follow my advice. However you think is most appropriate, please use it.
Ask the Russian German and the American Russian how to pronounce stuff. That's the right source. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that the technical name, and I'm just looking it up, so it says Claude 3 Sonnet. So, and I think that there's a paid version where the new release is called Opus. So yeah, that's the most intelligent.
The big one. Yeah. They have like a small, mid-sized, and a big one. And the big one is called Opus. They also seem to have implemented the big context window size, which Google also announced with Gemini 1.5. And yeah, this is good news from my point of view, because it means that it's not only Google able to do this, and Claude, I think, has the least resources of all, but like they now have Amazon, right? It's Amazon is in there?
Not sure. Yeah, that one, like, I don't know.
I think Amazon also like partnered with them, but like they have the least amount of resources and they're able to do this. So I'm kind of confident that the next GPT version will also be able to do big context windows, which I'm really looking for. I implemented now newly a token count for my application so that you can track how much token you use up. And let me say like this, like I might have to optimize. I'm not sure. I always see, like, we're in an enterprise, and also for you, if you look at costs and AI, realistic, because you try most of the time you try to get human hours reduced spent on a task, and you will do that, and it will be a big cost saver. So try not to focus too much on costs you might knew from software usage, but focus more on like costs. What can you save in human labor? I think like it was last week or the week before was Klarna, it's a big payment company at least here in Germany and Europe, and they implement AI. I think they spent like $3 million for the development. But they already got a 70 million cost reduction.
They develop their own proprietary model, or they
use the normal ChatGPT, I think the latest one, and they also like I heard this now several times, and I might have to try it out. They seem to be like you seem to be able to optimize prompts to a point where you might get away with GPT 3.5, which I find kind of interesting, because GPT 3.5 like more often than not, like, just completely craps on me. Like, the only thing I use GPT 3.5 is for recognizing the language used, because I change the language of my output based on the user's input. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is to check if I have a new, like, if the request coming in requests a new session. That's the two things that basically I use GPT 3.5 for. Everything else, everything that's even remotely into text understanding and text summarization, I use the big models. And having another big model in there with Claude 3 and a big context. Well, I think they already had with Claude 2 like 200k tokens, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They still have that right now. And they improve like they up it to 1 million some way down the road, and they also solved the needle in the haystack problem, and that's kind of nice. I've seen someone upload a complete Harry Potter story, and just put somewhere in between, put like a wrong sentence, and it was able to find it. So
what? How is someone able to upload a whole book? When I always get like, well, I have the free subscription, so I don't know what.
I think the first Harry Potter was like 300 pages something, and they were not that big page. I think the first book's not that big. Like the later ones, the fifth, sixth, seventh, they were like real, real big ones. But I think the first is not that large, and they don't put the whole book in, I guess. So, like, just they take how much they can fit in there, and
that's what I was.
I wouldn't be able to get the PDF in the first place. So where do I get the Harry Potter as PDF? Like,
well, and I always get kicked out. Like, get a notification when I upload like a 30-page PDF document. It's like too much,
okay,
too long of a document. So I always have to chop it up.
Just on that topic, I needed to completely rework my application last week because I tried to load history, like chat history from the old support customer support chat, which was 7,000 messages, and I semantically chunked them. And I ran into every limit there is. I ran into limits from my server. I ran into limits from token usage per minute. I ran into limits from context. Like, I needed this 300k context to get it, to get the whole stuff in and chunk it down. And I only had 128k. the token limits are a thing for handling large data sets. Needle in the haystack problem, of course. Is one of the bigger problems for even make any use of the large context. So I was excited with Google. I'm still excited, and even more excited now that others do it too, that we solve this, because in context learning, that's something. Because thinking about agents and teams, mm-hmm. and them working together, figuring stuff out, have a lot of memory basically they can carry along without needing some dodgy summarization solutions for your RAG pipeline, stuff like that. That's awesome. I'm really looking forward to that.
So I think that there's maybe two lens that I'll apply it to this development. So there's the B2B angle. So you're kind of thinking of like using it within your solution. And I think we talked about even recently, I think that you've mentioned that most implementations are RAG implementation, but I would caveat that because I think, you know, users can use ChatGPT out of the box. And so ultimately they're not using it maybe specific in a RAG. Like if you're just prompting against it, then it's like, just use your own knowledge to generate a post for me or an email. So, but what I think what's game changing, I think what you're kind of talking about is for people who are using these large language models for RAG paradigm, you're basically, these are smarter models that can understand or interpret language, context, and so many different other components of language that we weren't able to do before. So really the impact is to be able to provide more accurate results. And I think the key with this development was the fact that they claim it to be more cost effective, which is what you're kind of mentioning, is like maybe they're computationally smarter as well. So maybe they're utilizing their resources in a different way than the computational resources behind the scenes.
But I always have to quote my brother on that, like, it's still vector multiplication. So if there are a billion parameters, there are a billion parameters. It's nothing to change. Go back and forth. You can change stuff like quantization so that you don't use floating point digits, numbers, but use like integers and reduce the general weight size so to get the model smaller. But in the end, you have to multiply vectors. So there's no way to get around that. So I'm not sure how efficient compute is helping, but there is efficiency to gain on specific data sets, cleaner data sets, I think, stuff like that.
Maybe that's
Microsoft. Microsoft has proven it with Phi-2 and with Orca 2, I guess, that they have like small models, small language models that are really capable in specific tasks. I think Orca is trained on books only or something. So yeah, there is a lot of
data.
There is a lot of efficiency to gain, but the multiplication itself, it's just you can gain by faster GPUs, faster tensor cores, but in the end you have to multiply the vector, and that's math.
Math is math. But I think what it means to, just kind of tying it to the audience, is that you have more tools, more basically better, smarter models that you could potentially use for broader use cases ultimately. So I think that's the exciting part. And so you just have, and I think just general advice for me is you have to have an infrastructure that is flexible enough, enough to test with these different models. Sometimes, I mean, you don't need a beast of ChatGPT or GPT-4 in your solution. Sometimes a smaller model, much more nuanced, you know, and less computationally intensive is sufficient for your use case. So you just kind of estimate what you need or what objective does it need you need to meet, and then just test with different models. But one other thing that I wanted to mention as a consumer of these models, and cloud is definitely one of my preferred models to use for content and just kind of research or brainstorming ideas. I think they're still behind, because I think if you wanted to compete against the Geminis and the ChatGPTs, multimodality in the B2C world is huge. People want to go to a single place to be able to, you know, do multiple things.
And not only convenience, like it just allows you to do stuff you can't do. It's just basically, for example, processing audio and video, including the audio, and getting like the correct time code for a specific scene. You can't do this with text only. You just simply cannot do this. So having multimodality, like true multimodality, is really something on that front.
Yeah. So I think, although it's exciting, I think for B2B angle, so if you're implementing and you can use, you know, you have access to some of these models, it's exciting. But from a user standpoint, I only see like a marginal improvement, because the only thing I could continue to use it for is just text.
You wouldn't start writing 200K prompts now, from the good of your heart.
Yeah. No, and I think I actually was excited. I was like, maybe it's actually finally going to take my 30-page PDF document and give, you know, I could run prompts against it. No, I still had to go and truncate, you know, cut up my PDF. So I think that's still a big pain point for me. But still, you know, I would go to ChatGPT sometimes if I need to browse the web or, you know, do a quick research or generate an image all in one time. And sometimes I do this when I'm kind of brainstorming ideas for like posts or, you know, logos or other ideas that I'm kind of working on. It's just easier for me to just log into one platform, since I have the context and I have like already prompts built up, and I just basically ask, hey, can you just generate an image related to above? Yeah. You know, it's just more convenient.
You use it a lot, right? So,
yeah.
I was yesterday like in a situation my father-in-law, he was like on school like a reunion, like class reunion kind of thing, and they told us, he was like, they were like maybe 60 people in his class, or like they had two classes back there back in the day. So, and he's like mid 60s, and then he told us like 16 people of that 60 already died. Which I found kind of shocking, like in the, like mid 60, and I was like, no, that has to be above the average. And mm-hmm. then my who's like the husband of my wife's sister. I'm not sure.
So convoluted.
Yeah, like he was then Googling, and there are tables telling statistics. For insurance companies and stuff like that, because they need that information, like how's the lifespan, how realistic is that he's still living at 65, age 65, like in Germany, if he's male, so that's the kind of stuff. And I was just asking the same question to Gemini, because I thought, okay, like Gemini also has to be able to make some Google search stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And Gemini was first like giving me like a general stuff, because I forgot to mention that I'm male and that I'm in Germany. I went ahead and told him that, and he was upping the numbers. But like, I had no citations. I had no clue where the information is coming from. I guess it was hallucinated. But at least the answer came quick. just to give you the numbers, and that table for insurance companies, stuff like that, like there is a 97% chance you still live at age 65 today. They had 25% of their classmates die in that frame, so they were a really unlucky class.
I was like, I was waiting for you to like for like the plot of like plot twist when you said like, oh, and large language models have something to do with it.
no maybe some pandemic, but I don't know about that. So
speaking of models, can we talk about Perplexity? So have you heard about the news?
I think you're more into the topic.
Yeah, so the Perplexity hit the unicorn status. So I don't know. And then there's Inflection 2.5, I'm sorry, the news release. But just the amount of these models, I think, you know, that are flying under the radar, right? So you have OpenAI's GPT-4. ChatGPT, and then you have Cloud and Gemini and all kinds of things. And Perplexity, I mean, people talk about it a lot, but it just kind of has been flowing under the radar. They integrate with multiple models and they kind of just do their own thing. People call it the next Google. It's basically the alternative to Google
searches.
That's
how they position themselves, right?
Oh, I thought it was maybe just the way... Yeah, but if that's they're meeting that standard, because that's what I use them for.
Well, like at least as far as I understood, they position themselves as a search engine replacement, and that's why they position themselves against Google. So that's as far as I understood them. But like I'm not a Perplexity expert, but yeah.
So I use it actually for research myself. So yeah, what I really enjoy using it for specifically is just more relevant events. So we know that a lot of these models are behind on their mm-hmm. training data. So whenever I need to research a specific topic or do fact checking, that's what I usually use Perplexity for. So if I take an output from one model, I'll usually take it to another and then Perplexity. And I literally just do copy the text out of the other one and I go to Perplexity and say fact check. Mm-hmm. They just reached, I want to say, $1 billion unicorn status.
Yeah, unicorns, $1 billion. Yeah.
So, I mean...
But in valuation, of course.
Yeah. That's exciting in a way, but there's just more and more kind of models kind of coming to the market. I don't know, you know... Don't know. I'm going to maybe take a leap and say, like, just because there's so many players in the market with large language models becoming better and better and better, like, at some point, some of them will have to, like, merge.
But it's always like that, right? Like, there are M&A companies, or merger and acquisition companies. They do nothing else but take some space in the industry and buy all the companies and create one big one. That's kind of that's a business model people actually pursue. So,
and hopefully they become open. You know, they'll lift off the paywalls, because I think.
Yeah. I think the big names will have their own, like Amazon and Claude, Microsoft and OpenAI, Google and Google, Google and DeepMind. Let's not forget them, like, because the DeepMind guys are really doing a good job.
Let's give them credit.
Yeah, you have to, because like they basically run this AI thing at Google, and Google, the Google itself, like taking the DeepMind stuff and gives it resources. So, and they're like. If you look at what DeepMind has done for the AI space the last 20 years, it's just outstanding. So credit where credit's due, right?
So where I was going with that, with the merging, is the fact that, well, there's another something that I saw in the news, is that, you know, there's a company that is thinking, or that there's been screenshots. I don't remember the company. I apologize for anyone listening, but. Ads to chatbots are coming. So the reason why I was saying, like, I think mergers and open source are basically lifting off the paywalls. So if, again, like, if the strongest survive, and if they want to maintain market share, like, you have to open access to it, right? So, like, but somehow you have to make money back, which is how Google, Yahoo, and other engines kind of generate money, is through marketing. Right, advertising and things like that. So is that kind of the path too? Is like, you know, first we see a lot of these models come to market, then they merge, they lift off their paywalls, become much more widespread, and then ads come.
I mean look at streaming. Maybe it's a good comparison. Like, you had cable, you had all the advertising money flowing in there, and we had all to wait or record beforehand and skip like the old mm-hmm. days.
Yeah.
And then streaming came, and we had a lot of convenience. And looking at streaming services now, convenience melts down and down and down, and ads and stuff like that go in there. Like, Amazon Prime now wants like an extra $6 or something, or six or seven euros from me, just to watch ad free. And now I have a mid roll ad in every in every episode, which is honestly really annoying. And they have me close. Like, I could accept, like, in between episodes, that's fine. And they also get longer. Like, it starts out with like 19-20 seconds, and then, like, after when you binge watching anything, like after the third episode, it goes up to a minute mid roll. Like, you have like a 40-minute episode, and you have a minute mid roll
ads,
and you still think, yeah, okay, back in television days was 5 to 7 minutes, so I'll take that one.
Not that bad.
What I'm really pissed about, we have a DAZN or DAZN, or it's called, and they have upped their pricing from 10 mm-hmm. euros 3 years ago up to now 45 euros for the same package. And they still show me ads, and I was like, that's not okay. You like more than quadrupled your price, and you still show me ads. That's not okay.
Well, everything's become, but if you think about, you know, well, no, I think Netflix, you still have to pay a subscription. Like, a lot of these, you're still paying a subscription, but you're basically, to not sell to me, do not show me ads, but you have to pay extra. So I think they have to accommodate that money somehow, whether, you know, through advertisements or from consumers, right? Yeah. By adding that additional.
I happily throw every month like 12 euros or something at Google to just not show me ads on YouTube. And I'm really like, sometimes they had like some like changes, and you had then to reactivate subscription, and like from one moment to the other, I had this last month, like my YouTube Premium was gone, And I was like, yeah, there's so much ads. Like, that's ridiculous. I wasn't aware. Like, I have YouTube Premium for now, like, 4 years or 5 years or something. I hadn't seen an ad on YouTube like in years. and then all of a sudden, like, I get ads, and I was like, what's happening here? Eh? And then I just noticed, like, the premium logo, like, it's a separate logo, was gone, and I was like, what's happened? Was my subscription? And then I went ahead, bought the new one, until I noticed I was just in the wrong account. Somehow changed.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, that's for intelligence, right? Yeah.
But it's it's the world we live in. But yeah, we'll see how it kind of plays out. But just the volume of players, and everyone's investing so much money in the space. So yeah. Many of these large language models, I mean, will they become commodities? I don't know, but
I think there will be a paid source, a closed source, and an open source camp. I have now friends of mine. They they're like a really strong developer team. They're like a small company, and they want to stay small. Like, everyone owns the company. Like, everyone that works there. It's like kind of a shared model. I think they are like 9 or 10 people right now, and they do only like really like complicated projects. And they like just. Because they will one day of the week, they do like fun projects or like humanitarian projects and stuff like that. And last year they started with the first Llama model. They started the project Cloud. They named Cloudless GPT to run like your own LLM. And I think this week was like they announced that they basically done with the version 1 of that and had the quality at a point where it's basically usable. I had to follow up on them and look at what they've done. Might be worth a shot. Maybe even some guests for us. because Llama was released, and I think it took them like 24 hours to get it working on their own notebook. They are really cracks. Like, one of them even invented one programming language himself. So they're like, they're really deep in the tech.
Wow. That's really impressive.
I really like the guys, and always following what they do. And for me, the whole running local stuff, like, I was sitting in a train to Munich and back to Munich like for 7 hours or something. And as soon as you come to the south of Germany, you basically don't have internet anymore. And having a local model then with all the knowledge baked into that, it's kind of useful. I'll give you that. So that's why I have meanwhile I have a library of 6 models I hold on my disk to be able to use, like, with different strength. Not used them that often, but it's good to know they're there. And they're pretty usable. Like, since Mixtral open source got really, really usable, and I think you're like you told it like last episode or so, in your company you use Llama 2.
We don't use it, but we've tested with it.
Open source, and I'm really curious to see what Zuckerberg does with Llama 3 and Zuckerberg and Meta. Because this might be I can't imagine this will be a big leap for the whole open source community. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But all of that includes also that you do something with it and you start. And I think you had a post this week. This week, right? Yes. With analysis paralysis.
Yes. The silent killer of AI innovation.
Yeah. Elaborate a bit on that. What was your post about?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that we, and I've kind of write about this a lot, but I think that 2023 was all about observation. So end of 2022, ChatGPT came out. People were still kind of questioning whether it's a fad, it's going to stay around. People can, observed, especially larger organizations that tend to be risk averse. They just tend to sit and just see how kind of the market plays out. And I kind of, at the beginning of this year, I was like, I think 2024 is going to be all about action, because now all of last year was just lots of these use cases that are, you know, flying out like hotcakes out of these organizations saying like, oh, we have all of these efficiencies that are gained through, you know, implementing AI. And, you know, for every $3 million, we're now, you know, generating, you know, X number. And so this year is basically the action. But still, there's a lot of companies that are staying conservative and saying like, well, no. And I think there's just lots of objections and reservations. And I think mostly as I'm kind of learning more and more about like from business leaders, what it is, it's about large language models and not understanding how the technology works. And so I think data security is a big one, which we'll talk to. We will have a guest speaker to talk about this on this topic. But the, you know, losing basically hold off proprietary information or not having controls over what information lies, hallucinations, and all of the other things that kind of are being talked about kind of scare people from even getting started in AI, because they're like, well, do the risks outweigh the benefit? But the way that I talk about it is like, all risks, you should embrace risks actually, because I do believe that everything's addressable. So,
I always try to say, if no one dies or no one is severely damaged, it's not that bad. people staying up late nights to get some report done for some executive meeting, no one knows what they're talking even about. And as if someone dies if that report is not right on time through the meeting. So, I never got this. I already mentioned I was on a Microsoft event last week was called Envision AI Connection. Mm-hmm. And that Envision part is something that was mostly lacking, not on purpose. They tried. They had customers. They had really interesting projects. They also had some success stories to show. So that's fine and all, but especially with Copilot, which was a big focus of the event, they only showed the like top level stuff, which basically everyone could like do on his own. They don't need someone on the stage to show them. So, and no one got a bit deeper. Like sometimes they even showed something, they didn't even make showed any proof that worked. So, I also was listening to people just during lunchtime and stuff like that, just like listening to some conversations to get a feel like how are people thinking about that, like how's the general perception. And the general perception was that a lot of people just lack a lot, or basically all the vision. Like they're not inspired by what they see on stage. What they see on stage is like jacked up chatbots without like a lot of around it which really gets you inspired. Like for example, like what gets me inspired right now is the thought of like self-developing knowledge bases with AI technology and with language understanding, which improve, of course, in the end they improve the chatbot, but like they allow us to go into stuff like real conversations, like pre-discussing stuff before you give it to a human support agent, stuff like that. So and nothing, like everything was still the same stuff they show for a year, and a year in AI is a long time. And everyone who uses actual Copilot is kind of disappointed, but still, analysis paralysis, all that stuff should not keep you away, because there is a lot, as always, isn't every digitalization project ever. As soon as you start, the sooner you can start preparing your data, the sooner you can start preparing your company, upskill your people, and really dig into it. Because if you don't have the basic knowledge and you don't have prepared data, like shit in, shit out, right? If the data is not good, then the answers won't be good either. So yeah. That's you cannot start early enough, especially if you look at some of the people that are still on premises, not even moved to cloud, stuff's not accessible. Like there is a lot of work involved before you even could start feed the AI to help you with your problems. So yeah.
And I think What was I going to say? I think innovation in general requires a different level of thinking, which then just looking at numbers too. So where I'm going with that is that, you know, initially, a lot of these organizations are looking at Copilot because why? You know, it's easy. It's low cost to get started. They probably already have Microsoft subscriptions. So it's easier for them to get started to get efficiency gains in their organization, but that's not innovation. Yeah. So just because you have implemented systems that are powered by AI doesn't mean that you're an AI first company. So I think that's an important distinction. And I think in order for you to compete in the age of AI, it's not what vendor tools you're using, but how you are reinventing your business models or how you're bringing innovation into your organization. So,
or like maybe not your business model, but at least your business processes. Like,
yes.
But you're completely right. And I had one good example, which was PwC, the big consulting firm. They have worldwide a shortage of people. They just don't find enough people. They basically started heavy invests into AI, and now a lot of parts they usually used to give to junior consultants and stuff like that. They already use AI, and they also built their own LLM. I think they use GPT 3.5 or something as a basis, but they build up on top of it like something that does legal consulting for PwC, that's how they transformed the business model. And like I was asking him, like, because he was saying basically, yeah, we charge for billable hours, and I was like, yeah, but you have not the people, you cannot charge more billable hours. And that's when he said, yeah, of course, we have to change our business model. We have to go on products now and results and sell that and less of the billable hour stuff we had. So the whole behemoth that PwC is now starts to transform.
I had a conversation with someone about manufacturing, very similar. So another great example, and then maybe I'll offer some practical things of how companies can also get started. But this is a conversation that I had about, you know, a company that delivers equipment to the automotive industry. So I didn't realize that this was a thing when I was having this conversation where, you know, typically, you know, you build efficiency. So you have a company that developed, you know, better ways of modeling, let's say, equipment. So what ends up happening is that you have more efficient parts or equipment with less components. And then when you sell that to, you know, automotive industry, they get a pushback. I would be like, why not? I mean, like there's less parts to fix and it's just easier. Actually, you know, automotive is a service-based company, so they actually make most of their revenues on servicing vehicles. So they actually want more parts. And then there's another company, another layer that basically says, well, how about we give you a product, basically a service that enables you to troubleshoot the equipment. So we're going to provide you efficiencies to your service people to find faults in their engines or in these parts to be able to troubleshoot and, you know, fix the vehicle parts quicker. But if you think about it, there's two different sides of the coin, right? One is, you know, business model oriented, and the business model is at risk. So it's up to you as an organization whether you want to like reimagine. So less parts means that you can charge less, or maybe there's other things that you could offer or reimagine your business model that you can actually embrace that technology that's just better for humanities to have less components in our machinery. But if you look at the other technologies, it's actually tackling their operating model, right? So, and to that, I was like, that's a no-brainer, because to the customer, you're still charging the same amount of money. Yeah. But how you actually tackle the problem, if you basically can fix that you know, equipment or that piece of machinery instead of 8 hours, in 2 hours, you're still paying the same amount of money. So you're just basically are able to produce or use less workforce in order to provide the same service. And so it's just different. And I was like, yeah, this is a great example of like one looking at business model, and then the other one looking at and affecting the operating model. But one way to get started, and I think in AI and a lot of companies, again, we're kind of talking about like inaction, analysis paralysis. Actually, probably contrary to what we're talking about, innovation is, it should not be the first thing that you tackle in AI. It's actually, you should be building muscle in AI to get started with out of the box tools. So choose easy implementation.
Make some operational gains.
Exactly.
And the operational gains example is actually one I really like, because I was thinking, for example, for developers, that they basically are done. Like that we have some years left, some good ones, then some not so good ones, and then we're basically done. But I got a new perspective on that from some weeks ago, and I found it kind of interesting, because someone said, like, if you now have a software company and you would have added something to your product which would cost you $100K, but it only would make you $100K. So from an operational standpoint, like, you don't make any money with that. You don't do it. Now comes AI. The developer is doing that. Like, let's assume it's one developer is now doing the thing not for 100K but for 50K. And from that point, you earn 50K. Wouldn't you be then inclined to do more of that projects? And maybe hire even more people, which kind of got me thinking, like, yeah, maybe I got it wrong. Maybe I just assumed the wrong things, because it makes totally sense if you think about it. And I found it really, really interesting. A lot of people that I tell that are the same as I was when I heard it the first time. I was like, yeah, that's kind of right. And that's actually what happens, right? I'm really, really confident with that. The operational gains are worth it already, because you then might be able to do stuff you wanted to do, but it was just not economically feasible. So now go ahead.
Exactly, and I think one of the other lens for why it probably makes sense to get started in operational efficiencies is the fact that you're typically trying to improve an existing process. So you already have that process down. You're just trying to expedite the delivery of that value in more efficient ways. And so look at marketing and content generation or brainstorming and all kinds of things. Those creative tasks typically take a lot more time. Customer service, right? So that's an existing process that you're looking to make more efficient. There's not much innovation per se that is happening. You're just basically delivering that value. So it's an established process. You typically are going to be using out-of-the-box tools. There's just plenty of tools to choose from. And you're going to try to do some evaluation of ROI, measuring success, metrics, and things like that. That gives you the foundation and the practice to start getting more and more your hands dirty in the AI space. And that's when you tackle innovation.
Yeah.
And that's when you bring in, I would say, probably at that stage, you're not ready to innovate on your own. I would bring in, people who are skilled in that space to help you innovate, to help you brainstorm those use cases and other things like that. So tackle innovation second. But it's so important to not, ignore the efficiencies so that you can build that experience.
And also, no one's born an innovator. No company is like a natural innovative or something like that. Like, they really have to try and fail and try again. And the sooner you start, the sooner you get to that interesting innovation state. So,
yeah.
Always worth a shot.
Yeah. So I think I, hopefully you got some things out of this podcast. I know we tried to tackle it a little bit differently this time, and
it was a bit more loose.
We had a interesting kind of starting to this podcast. Hopefully you liked it, but always open to feedback. Happy that you're with us, and we're really excited to continue doing this. So please let us know what resonates with you as far as kind of our format, what we talk about, if there's a specific topic you'd like to for us to talk more about, happy to. But I think it's another enjoyable episode.
Yep. We promise guests we will deliver on that. They're on the way. like somewhere between Bangkok and Shanghai, I heard. and yeah, no, they will be here, and we are really, really excited to expand our universe with some awesome guests. Hope you stay with us. I hope you enjoyed us so far. And yeah, from that point, I'll close it for my part. Lana, your last words.
Yeah, no, I think we've said everything. Just again, open to feedback. We'd love to. We've put out 5 episodes up to this point. This is our 6th. Love to learn from you.
Yeah.
We haven't had as many people comment, at least on YouTube and some of our other channels, but please, I think this is how we ensure that we can deliver value to you and what resonates, what we could be improving. Again, we're we have thick skin, so we can take the feedback
yeah,
you know, positive or negative. No, we're open to it.
We cry a bit, then we work on it.
You don't see that part, but yeah, and then we come back. But yeah,
it
please.
It would bring clicks. It would.
Maybe that's going to be the clickbait image, yeah. Us crying at the beginning of next episode. But yeah, no, I would very much again invite people to provide feedback to us and let us know how we're doing.
See you.
Thank you all. Bye.